so you don't get to see what...
Should we act it out?
Yeah, so what's happening here is there's 200 feet of surgical tubing and me on a hovercraft, and it ends really badly. I'll put it up on our website, and you'll see something really unhappy happen. This thing called Hackers on a Plane, which happened, which was probably a really defining event for our space, in that George, Peter, and I went on this thing, and we went to DEF CON and then on to CCC, which is a camp that happens every 4 years, and there's things blinking everywhere, and then we went on this tour of all these hacker spaces and got really inspired, and then we saw that presentation you just saw a year ago in C4, and George and I, afterwards, we kind of met. We'd been traveling around for like 2 weeks together, and I'm like, so where are you from? He's like, New York. I'm like, I'm from New York too. We should probably do this. And he's like, yeah, okay, okay, we need a name. So we spent 4 hours coming up with a name, and then got the name and then put together all the, so here we are watching that presentation with Jens and Pylon, and then now I've broken it. There we go. We're all really excited about this. And then we got all the, we did like our mailing list and all that stuff right there. And then we came back, it's going automatically. Then we came back to NYC. Oh, stop that. And then we had a little meetup, just the three of us. And then we started meeting, just pulling people together that we thought would be good people. And we met in kind of interesting places. And rooftops and such. And then, yeah, we incorporated. And what we started doing is, we incorporated later, actually. We started having microcontroller study groups where we invited people to come and bring projects and do show and tells. And that was really fun. This is a project that came. I think this is Dave's audio oscilloscope project, which is like awesome. And then Nick taught this cool, like, how to use Alumalite to make things like reproductions of things. So it was just general, like, talking and chit-chatting and becoming friends. And then we decided that we needed to obtain a space.
How does this work, by the way?
Right arrow.
Right arrow, okay. I'm Dave. After we got together and decided to get a space, we put together a budget, about $2,000, and set out some basic criteria. Reasonably safe neighborhood, you know, a certain amount of space, certain amount of rooms. Wanted to have a kitchen and stuff so that shower so we could have guests that didn't actually end up working out, but those were what we were looking for. We tried to, you know, talk to friends, people that we knew who were doing similar things, like what's that space in Williamsburg? The artist
Third Ward.
Yeah, so we talked to those guys. They had a lot of good spaces to show us, and basically ended up Craigslist and brokers were the main sources. And so we divided up into teams, maybe three or four people looking at a few different neighborhoods, or each team looking at an individual neighborhood. We looked at three or four neighborhoods and, you know, kind of farmed that out and got together as a big group and looked at a few spaces. We kind of started out with this. Somebody made this nice CAD diagram of what we were looking for, ideally, kind of a main space and little work areas on the side. Looked at a lot of places, all downtown Brooklyn, essentially, Park Slope. I don't know how many of you guys are from New York, but those were kind of, a lot of us live there, and that was reasonable budget-wise compared to Manhattan. And kind of what we ended up with was, doesn't look that much like the original CAD diagram, but it's a big, open, kind of industrial commercial space. It's about 1,000 square feet. As you can see, it can actually fit quite a lot of people. These pictures are mostly early on. The one down in the bottom right is kind of what it more looks like now that it's full of stuff. But it's really great space. You get these big work tables in there. You can have classes. You can have these big meetings. So I think it worked out really well. Who's next?
Well, I'm up next. All right. So then we decided to move in. And these are just a bunch of pictures of us making stuff, moving in. Yay. And then next up is Kelly.
So the biggest problem that we had early on with the space, well, not the biggest problem, but a big problem, was organization and the fact that it got really messy really fast. So there's a couple things we did to kind of combat the clutter. There's nothing more infuriating than having it be like 4 a.m. and knowing that somewhere in the space is exactly the cable you need, and it's in one of like 7 different bags, and you're never going to find it. So Alicia, who actually put this together, who's stepping in for right now, went crazy and got containers and labels for everything. And what we did was we organized everything by what it was, put it in little boxes, and then labeled it. The labels are the most important part. We also gave everyone their own space, like a shelf with their name on it, so you knew whose shelf that was, and then a public shelf that was the share shelf, so that everyone knew that these are the things that you can take whenever you want, these are the things you should ask someone for, and these are the things you should never take because they're not yours. So drawers, buckets, bins, labels, just anything you can do to denote what stuff is, and then magically people start to use it and follow it, and then you can actually find things. It takes a little bit of effort. It's something that's kind of an ongoing thing you have to do. It's not magic. You once a month have to say, okay, it's organization day. We're going to take that big bucket of weird stuff and actually put it where it belongs. But once you do that, it makes your space so much more usable. Ta-da!
So Dino? You have next, and then Justin after.
Okay, so I'm going to talk to this.
Huh? Right arrow.
Right arrow. I'm going to talk to this slide deck that I haven't seen in about a couple months, so bear with me. So I'm going to talk about some of the things that happen in NYC Resistor. One of the things that we do is it's called Hacksploitation Cinema Night. This happens each Sunday. It's sort of like a good way to kind of end the weekend, hang out, figure out the most creative way to make popcorn using a Jacob's Ladder or whatever else we can find, and basically, you know, revel in some of the finer slash cheesier movies that have come out, especially highlighting or exploiting our culture. So we've been doing this for a couple months and gone through kind of a lot of the usual suspects and avoided some of the other ones. I think Swordfish was vetoed a long time ago. And although it's sitting on the hard drive, I have to admit, so basically what we do is we have a projector, a laptop, hard drive full of movies, all legally. Legal backups of ones for which we all have the hard copy placed in the vault, you know, the collective NYC Resistor vault. So please don't come after us. the other thing is something I started that I call Security Research Fight Club, where I'm about to break the first rule. Rules of Security Fight Club. First rule about Security Fight Club, you do not talk about Security Research Fight Club. Oops. Sorry. Second rule, apparently you do not talk about what is presented at Security Research Fight Club. Basically, the idea is this is something where you can present like sort of raw ideas, and so you want to make sure that they can kind of bounce ideas off people before kind of going public with them. Security community has had a long history of people basically taking something that someone else has done, saying it's theirs, and so you have a lot of apprehension to that, so you kind of have some ground rules like that. Third rule, if someone says stop or goes limp, aka falls asleep, your presentation is boring and it's over. yeah, I'm not going to repeat that. only one person to a presentation. Come on, you have to be able to hold your own. One presentation at a time, and no vendors, no pitches, no company names, no any crap like that. The presentation will last 20 minutes, and most importantly, if it's your first night at Security Research Fight Club, you have to present. This is unavoidable. Basically, the idea is everyone has to be a contributing member, and so you have to be able to teach other people something interesting. And so basically kind of taking it back to discovering something, teaching your friends, and kind of keep the ideas flowing. So that we also hope that kind of raises the bar a little bit. So it's like you want to impress people, you want to show up, you have to prepare at least something. Sorry?
Define interest.
Do I find interest? Interesting things?
No.
Okay, define interesting. Interesting is defined by the peer group, basically, people who are there. If
they find. Jonas, you're just not cool enough.
If we fall asleep, it's not interesting. All right, I think it's Justin's turn.
Hi, I'm Justin. So one of the ways that we fund the space, besides membership dues, is every once in a while we throw a big party. So that's a lot of fun. We like the parties to have themes. One of our recent parties was the Blinky 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 Party. And one of the upcoming parties we're having is the Art of the Game Party. And so what we're going to be doing is inviting people who want to show off video games as art type of demonstrations. We're going to set up a whole bunch of really cool looking stuff in the space, and then we're going to get a bunch of beer and have people over, and people will pay a pretty hefty but worthwhile entrance fee, and that will help keep the space going. So some of the things that we're going to be showing off. One is Kobo Soda, and if you've been by our space, our spot in the Hackerspace Village, you may have seen this. So it's a physics simulator with some genetic algorithm tools. So these little robots evolve right there on the screen, and it's pretty cool to watch them do stuff. The version that we're showing off here is a very early version, and the version we're going to be showing off at this party will allow you a greater level of interactivity. You'll be able to pick parents and train your little robots and have them compete against each other. And it should be a lot of fun. And then another thing that we're going to be showing off, amongst a lot of other things, but another thing for sure we're going to be showing off is some Game Boy demo stuff. So basically, we've been, several of us have been hacking on Game Boy Advance code, making neat little things, which happens to be because I taught a class on Game Boy Advance development recently. So everyone's all excited. So there should be a lot of Game Boy stuff too. That's it. Yep.
Hi, I'm Zach, and one of the slogans of NYC Resistor from the start has been to make, learn, and share. And so after we make things, or when we make things, we learn how to do them, and then at the end we like to share what we've learned with other people. And so one of the ways you can do this, kind of standard way, is to teach classes. The classes are nice because, we're in New York and rental costs are like extreme. Like we're paying like $2,000 for a tiny 1,000-square-foot room. And so by teaching classes allows us to bring in money but also give our knowledge to other people. So here are a few of the different classes we've taught. Like Kelly taught a PHP class. Adam and Raphael and some of the guys teach an LED matrix class, which, if you come over by our Hackerspace Village area, we have all sorts of LED matrices, and they're pretty fun to make. Raphael teaches a surface mount soldering class, so you can learn how to solder all the tiny little parts on boards like this. I teach an Introduction to Eagle class, so if you want to learn how to actually make the PCBs or make your own board, it's kind of nice. And if you're interested in signing up for classes, you can just come up to this tiny screen here or the projector and we'll sign you up. Actually, on our website, nycresistor.com, this is the header. So come and learn and fill your brains.
I'm Pat. I also, like Dino, have not seen these slides in like 2 months, so forgive me if I'm rusty. But I think the transition here is that, between sharing our knowledge and our resources, the kind of gap here, right? Mm-hmm. Right arrow. So we kind of have two forms of stuff at the space, physical and imaginary. And so the physical stuff is kind of like, whatever, our drill press, our NYC Resistor toothbrush, and that sandwich in the refrigerator, things like that. So those things are pretty easy to share because you guys probably all have roommates. It's the same thing as sharing a toothbrush with your roommate or anybody else. People do it, so there's no real problem finding ways to share these kinds of resources. Then we have the imaginary objects. So those are a little bit more difficult. And so kind of like what Dino was talking about, we have to have this culture of you can come and share ideas and not worry about people, stealing them. And so, that's kind of something that we haven't really formalized, but it's, something that kind of has come organically because of, just the culture of everybody, here. And so that's kind of important to us, and I think important in an environment like this, that you have to make sure that you kind of protect people's ideas and you don't, kind of do it. You wouldn't steal somebody's sandwich in the refrigerator, so don't steal their Smurf or their black box or whatever. So then the physical stuff, like I said before, it's pretty easy. If you need the drill press and nobody's using it, you go and use it. And, we want to make sure that there's not one dude like Zach always using the drill press. So, you got to make sure to balance those resources just like you would any other physical resource. And like I said about the imaginary things, you can see I didn't see these slides because I talked about this earlier. But we basically have this this is kind of, I wrote these slides as like a description of our culture, not necessarily like we decided on these and then our culture grew out of that. And so that's kind of an important thing to note. So we just make sure that it's very open, like you don't have to worry about hiding your ideas, and then, you know, it's trusted that you're not going to steal anything or you're going to properly attribute people that who've helped you. So.
Hi, I'm Rose. I'm a sociology PhD student at CUNY right now, and I'm also a member of Resistor. Stuff that I do includes sort of everything to do with textiles, some things to do with sex. And what I learn at Resistor is how to include electronics and also you know, physical computing kind of aspects to craft things that I've previously been interested in. When I say that I'm a sociologist, it's not that I'm, you know, a person from the outside coming in to, you know, report back about the geeks and freaks, but instead it's me as a geek going in as an agent provocateur into academia so that our wonderful ideas about how to self-organize and how our culture works can be shared with a more academic mindset. Modern sociology developed in the 19th century as a way to respond to or to describe what was going on as people were moving to cities and urbanizing and also industrializing. But what's been happening at the end of the 20th century and the beginning of the 21st is that humans are organizing in a different way, which is using the internet. And sociology hasn't really responded to that, and in fact say that, you know, oh, you're taking part in virtual communities, and they always put the quotes in, or they sort of wave their hands when they talk about the internet. But it's the place where we all live, and it needs to be talked about. The additional part of that is that the current thought in sociology is that, especially in America, we're all losing touch with each other. We're not parts of communities. We're bowling alone, as Robert Putnam called it. But that's not happening in the world that I live in. We're all here at a conference. We're all sharing a space together, working on projects together. And as you've heard all the other members of the group say, we give a lot of thought to how that culture works and how we're going to, you know, present it to the world. We create media. We also have sort of taken back the means of production. That's what I mean when I say that we're going to have a revolution. You know, Marx explained to us in the 19th century that capitalism was a centralizing of resources, and that it took the means of production away from the people and put it with the corporations. We're the kind of people who take back the means of production. To rip off Tim O'Reilly, who was quoting William Gibson, I believe the revolution's already here, it's just not widely distributed. I go back one, and I also think that hackers and geeks are the people who can make some parts of capitalism, and especially some parts of globalism, good for all of us, and I hope that we continue to do so.
Hi, I'm Nick.
So I work at the New York Times during the day in the Research and Development Group, and at night I put on this really cool outfit. I'm wearing it right now. And I go to the hackerspace. So my talk is really about, you know, if an LED blinks in the wood and nobody's there to see, is it really blinking? Okay. So one of the things we do is we document everything before, after, and during, and we put it on our site. And so you can go to the blog, which is nycresistor.com, and we document everything that we're working on pretty much. And we also document things that other people are working on in the community. So this is just a project that Adam was working on, which was Barbot, which was a robot that got you drunk, but ended up getting drunk itself and stopped working. This is just Zach does these really cool videos where he does these films himself building things and then speeds them up, and they're really cool. We put those on the site. We document the classes that we teach and how we teach those. This is one of the classes going on. This is some stuff from other sites that we've taken, and we talk about this, you know, a lot of Arduino stuff because we're a little Arduino obsessed, but just explaining how things work, linking to the code, different things like that. And then also on the site we show where our classes are and how you can sign up and things along those lines. We have a calendar over here. We have a way for people to donate, so you should all donate. we have an IRC chat that people can go on and talk about. Actually, these guys are talking about their pants status, but I'll get to that later. And then we put things on other sites. So, you know, we put up videos of how we make things on YouTube, Blip TV, Vimeo. This is Danger Shield, which is a really cool product that we're selling downstairs. And then people put them on their personal sites. This is Bree's site, putting stuff up there. This is Eric's gift site. And then pretty much anywhere else that we can actually document and show what we're working on. These are photos on Flickr of how to build things on the Make site. And also we tweet about things. And you'll see that this tweet is about somebody not wearing pants, and that's because one night we were out and Bree stole my cell phone and sent a tweet that said, pant status equals I'm not wearing pants in a public place. So you can actually send a pant status tweet right now, and it'll go on the pant status website, so pantstatus.com. And then we also have a wiki, and this is really where we document everything and allow people to come on and download tutorials. So this is the Eagle tutorial that Zach was talking about before, the Game Boy 101 classes. We put code on there. We put all these different things on there. So we're not fucking around, pretty much. That's what it breaks down to.
So I'm Max, and as you can tell, we're incredibly awesome. I have no idea how to advance the slides.
Right now.
Cool. Awesome.
It's awesome. So the question is, how do we stay awesome? Because we are pretty awesome. And the answer is we fail. Take failure as a target. Fail massively. All kinds of research is coming out saying that the best way to learn is to just screw up over and over and over again. So some ways to fail, interestingly, set impossible deadlines. We're going to buy and master and bring to Hope a laser cutter. Expect that you'll get unlikely levels of participation. So if we can just get 144 people, each with their own 120 milliwatt laser, we can do blinking lights to the space station. Really easy. And the last thing is, don't read the manual. The manual can only tell you what the system should do, not what you should do with it. You should read the manual after you fuck up. So, for example, what's the pound test on clothesline? Not that much. But given that, while you're doing all these things about failure, make sure that you put safety someplace on the number line. Safety third tends to be bad luck. So stay away from safety third. But anywhere between like zero and approaching infinity slowly, the more judgment you use, the lower priority you can put safety. For epic success, you must epically fail first. Which brings us to destruction.
So my part of the talk is on things that could destroy us, which I guess is pretty self-explanatory. So what am I doing here? It's a Mac. It's really hard to use. Okay. Things that could destroy us, number one. Automata run amok. So basically what we're saying here is when you're in a hackerspace, people have great ideas. And some of those ideas are incredibly dangerous. Don't always go along with them. Sometimes you have to say, that might kill me, or that will kill me, or that guy over there is bleeding and it's a bad idea. So don't screw up, don't get into lawsuits, and don't die. Green energy. So basically, since I'm a huge fan of the Republican Party and I'm totally not a communist, I have to provide the counterpoint here. A lot of these hackerspaces exist in metropolitan areas for a reason. It's because there's a lot of people in an area where there's not a lot of, you know, space. So a lot of us run around and we get these hacker spaces because we live in small apartments and it's easy because there's a lot of us in a single isolated area. If we suddenly develop a great green energy resource, we might spread out. And then what will happen? I don't know. But as it is, it's really freaking convenient. Solder. So yes, I wrote that whole thing. So solder's really bad for you. So is a lot of other things. If Eric was here, I would tell you about a particular incident involving huffing perchlorate. not a good idea. Solder also gives you lead poisoning. This happens. It's not a joke. You know, exercise precautions when working with dangerous chemicals. That was pretty straightforward. Same idea. So the other thing is storing and keeping chemicals can be dangerous. If you are making your own black powder, you're probably going to get arrested. Sorry. Gang wars with rivals. So there are a lot of hacker spaces out there. There are the Germans, there are the New Yorkers, there are Washington, D.C., and Philly, and I guess all the West Coast guys who are crazy. Don't get into wars with them. Be friendly. I know at times it's hard when Nick Farr comes up to you and he's patting you on the head and calling you names. Hi, Nick. Don't do that. Two hackers enter, one hacker leaves. Competition is healthy, just as we went over. We all die, by the way. I just thought I'd mention that. Remind you of your own mortality. It's true. We all die. Sorry. The Amish. They're out there. They are real. Okay, so in our current day and age, LEDs are kind of dangerous. I mean, you go into an airport with LEDs on you, you're going to get attacked. It's what's going to happen. So exercise some caution. Remember that not everyone out there understands technology, and people react a little strangely to it, especially in these trying times where there's terrorists out to get us and the TSA. So pretty straightforward. Don't put on a jacket with flashing LEDs that says countdown clock, you know, that's, don't go running through the airport. Okay. Oh yeah, so, up next, the Large Hadron Collider. It could kill us, but not for the reasons that anyone knows about. So, I like to think of CERN as the biggest hackerspace collective in the world. With the best toys. With the best toys, for sure. So, you gotta love when these guys get together and have a conversation about the end of the world being possible with one of their experiments, and whether or not this is something we should be concerned about. So, yeah, they could kill us all. Poverty. Toys are expensive. Blowing up toys, even more expensive. Burning your space down, kind of expensive. Leaving the door open in the middle of MetroTech, also expensive. There's a lot of ways to run out of money, and, you know, then you'll just basically be sitting around on boxes or garbage piles, as the case may be. And then there's creepy people. Now, if you have a hackerspace, you have people over. It's a communal thing, a social aspect. Which means, even if you've been up for 4 days straight and you've been coding nonstop, you might want to, you know, spray something on yourself. I mean, obviously, this is a joke. A lot of the people over here are famous. Pedo Bear especially, he's a good guy. Indeed. They are creepy people. Don't have them in your space because it scares the women folk away. Please don't ban me.
Oh. So then we have parties. We mentioned that earlier. We'll just go. Oh, I broke it again by pressing the wrong key. No, there's not. So, yay, parties! And the middle finger. You can ask Adam. He knows like 75 different ways of giving you the middle finger. And drinking is good. Oh, and cake. I've seen it. So we have a cake hacker, which is really great. Every hackerspace should have a cake hacker. This is a cake for somebody who makes twitchies. It's actually an embedded twitchy inside a cake. Those candles twitch. This one blinks. This is the PGP code for happy birthday. Yeah. That's, Alicia's awesome. And one of the things that happened that we didn't an added bonus to having a hackerspace is we've actually, we've all become really good friends, and which is just really nice. I don't know why this involves friendship, but it looks cool. And coming soon, we're going to have a party on the 26th, which is next weekend. And on the 29th, not at NYC Resistor, but we're holding soldering championships. So if you think you can solder, come and get beat.
Especially if you're from Philly.
Yeah. And now we've actually got a considerable amount of time, I hope. Yeah, we've got about half an hour for questions. And if you don't ask questions, we'll just go down and get another few bottles of Club Mate. Questions?
Yes, the guy in the with the hand.
I was wondering, when's your next general meeting?
Tuesday.
We do. Well, we have. So it's interesting. Yes. Yeah, we meet on Tuesdays. But if you want to actually come to, if you
go to the site, there's a calendar that you can see. But we hold a microcontroller study group once every few weeks, sometimes every month. It depends. So it's probably going to quieten down a little bit for the summer. But once it starts to cool down again, we'll start doing them a little bit more.
And there's a party. Come to the party.
Come to the party. You might get blown up or something fun like that.
Or a robot might get you drunk.
Yes.
I've had apartments in New York, like, just with a couple servers. Like, I'm always popping the circuit breakers. Like, when you guys were looking for a space, did you have to take into account, like, power loads? Like, you thought you were probably going to be more of a strain than some other tenants?
We should have taken that into account.
I think I flip that switch every day or two.
Yeah.
The microwave is the biggest offender.
And also, so we're looking into getting a laser cutter, and one of the issues that they came up was, it's a laser. We have to power it somehow. And so what we're actually looking at this point is having to have a contractor come in and put in more electricity because we've run out. So it's definitely something that you should consider in your space and also what your needs are for exactly the equipment you plan on using.
You should always steal power, too.
You want to fight in the Security Research Fight Club, is it probably a good idea, or how would you find out how to present something that hasn't been presented over and over and over?
That's a very good question.
Don't talk about it.
I can no longer talk about it. There's nothing special about Fight Club. You can have a Fight Club in your town as well. Oh.
How do you get people to pay dues?
What was that question? How do you get people to pay dues? Here, Zach will take that one.
Well, you have to be a real bastard about it, so make sure your treasurer is a jerk.
That's Zach.
That's me. Or at least able to be a jerk at certain times. But seriously, we use PayPal because they have this like recurring payment service, and so that way like the money just comes in every month, and you don't have to bug people, because like bugging like 30 people to give you money every month is not fun. Whereas like, you know, if it just comes out of their bank account, like they'll forget about it, and then.
I'm not sure if your question was how do you get the people in an existing group to pay dues, or how do you find a group of people who are willing to pay dues, but we've actually just been having internal discussions and decided to raise our dues, you know, that we're all paying, in order to have a more comfortable cushion in our bank account. So that isn't a problem that we've had to date.
How many members do you have?
27 members over there. We plan to take over the world, one hacker at a time. No,
we're actually basically stopping for the moment, taking new members, because it's kind of full up, and we kind of want to get to know everybody. And then once we do, we'll we'll go from there.
So right now it's about 30?
We got 27 right now. Three times three times three.
Back there.
Do you have any example of rural hackerspaces and that have worked out like you guys have?
You should totally come to Nick Farr's presentation tomorrow. He's going to talk about that. And I know that they exist.
How much do you charge a month to your members to be able to have enough money to get projects going on in the space?
So when we first started, it was actually ridiculously cheap. It was $43 a month, which gave people $42. Sorry, I apologize. Please don't beat me up later. And the goal was we were going to have, 40 members or so, but we didn't know how big of a space we were going to get, and the space we got quickly filled up with a lot of junk and tables and tools and things like that. And so we recently just reevaluated and we bumped it up to 75. Sorry, I didn't want to get that wrong. That's actually going to give us some cushion that we can, help put a little money in the bank for when we need to get things like tables and more chairs and things like that.
The classes work really well. One of the things we wanted to do, the classes are a good way to earn money for the space, but we also want to make sure that the teachers are fairly compensated. There's some other places where people can teach and they get paid an hourly rate. What we do is just split it 50-50. So if a teacher has a full class, then they're making some pretty good money. So, that works pretty well. It's definitely not enough to pay the bills, which is why we're raising dues, because one of the reasons we're raising dues is because we wanted to make sure that all of the space itself was paid for by the members, so we don't have to every month scramble are we getting enough classes, or we need to throw a party to make money. We want the space to be in a safe place so that if everybody gets busy in July and they're going to hacker conferences every weekend, that the space isn't just going to crumble and fall away. So, but the parties and the classes are great because in addition to the dues, they allow us to sort of build up this war chest that we can then use to do cool projects, or maybe buy a laser or do things that are beyond just paying the rent, because just paying the rent is not a good place to be.
The classes and the parties are also really amazing because of the community that's built around it. The classes, everyone that's come has been really great, and we've had, people have asked for different classes, and it's the community aspect has been pretty amazing.
And then are you guys incorporated in any fashion, like as an LLC or charity? Or...
questions go to Zach.
Yeah, thanks.
And you made that decision, did you take other hacker groups as a model when choosing?
So we, for no real reason at all, just decided to incorporate as an LLC. I guess the word on the street is that doing a corporation like that somehow shields you from getting sued out of existence as a person. So we wanted to make sure that by building a space that we weren't going to put any of the initial founders at risk personally, because it's already sort of a big risk in and of itself just to start a space like this. So we wanted to make sure that, if Nick cuts his hand off on the chop saw, that we're gonna be able to feed our kids.
Because so. Nick's small.
A lot of your projects seem to be focused around digital logic and microcontrollers. I was wondering if you guys did anything with the way of high voltage electronics, like Tesla coils, anything like that.
Bree, you should talk about the marshmallows.
Oh, yeah, so Danielle came over with some homemade marshmallows, which it took
a video.
Yeah, and it took, I think it took 1 minute before Max was like, why aren't we roasting these over the Jacob's Ladder? And you know what? It tastes...
Can I jump on the Wi-Fi? Is there anybody going to hack your computer?
It's not... I'm not sure. I think that was a yes to both answers, or both questions.
Oh, okay. I'm gonna back off. But you should go to NYC Resistance.
So there's a good video of that. So we did. We played with a Jacob's Ladder a bunch, but I think that's the only thing we've actually done at this space. We've got other people who are obsessed with.
But it's not just microcontroller stuff. So you know, like Dino's working on a lot of programming things, and there's the Game Boy stuff, and so there's a bit, there's a wide variety. I think the microcontroller stuff really shows more in the photos because it's fun to take pictures of blinking lights, you know, things like that. So. Back there in the right, the guy with the hand.
When we started, the people who, because when we started, we were like, how the heck do we get this off the ground? And then the nine of us who were at that time each put in $1,000, knowing that we would never see it again. And that was kind of, yeah.
Thanks a lot, guys.
And at that point, we were kind of like right up until that point, we were like, oh, will this exist or not? And then we each put our $1,000 in, and it was like, fuck yeah, this is going to exist, because I just put $1,000 in. So, at least in my mind, it was like this switch that went like, yeah, okay, this is going to be awesome, this can really happen, to like, yes! What was the question? Oh, so keys. So at that point, like, those people had keys, and then it sort of went to like, okay, who needs keys? And so like, after I think Alicia had woken up Zach like 10 or 15 times to be able to go into the space, like finally it was like, fine, you get keys. And now like when you, like Rose got keys the other day, part of the deal is our deposit is you have to go to the hardware store around the corner and spend $20 on something for the space, and then you can have your own set of keys. It's like, that's the key deposit. And you have to get locked out three times.
I think that, so when we originally started, there was the nine of us that were the core start members, and we kind of thought it was going to be a two-tier system so that the people that put in $1,000 would have the keys and the other people would have to call Zach in the morning when he was sleeping to get in. And the community of people that ended up joining the space and becoming members was just so great that we realized there wasn't any differentiation. And so that was really important. Just to that point, I said to Bree once, you know, we have a meeting every Tuesday night where we go for infrastructure, and I said, you know, if you look around, the people that are part of this group is just really, really amazing. It's an amazing group. Back there.
So you said that you're not taking on new members now. How do you get involved for Raptor?
Come to our party. Take classes.
Yeah, take classes, come to the microcontroller study group. We post public events on our blog whenever we have them, and it's a great way to kind of come and get involved and that sort of stuff. You know, you don't have to have a project that you're working on to come to a microcontroller study group. You can just have an idea or just want to talk about to people about what they're working on. So it doesn't have to be real structured.
And it'd be also, I mean, it's great if other hacker groups start. It doesn't just have to be one hacker group in NYC, right? So, you know, and if anyone's interested, you should come and talk to any of us afterwards, and we can explain, or email us, and you can come by the space and explain what we went through and how you can start your own hacker club, too.
We also, on Thursday nights, and we're not having these for the rest of the summer, but we'll resume again, we have craft night. And so people come to the space with more craft-oriented projects, but that doesn't preclude other people working on sort of electronics-based projects. And that's another time that the space is open.
We usually don't tell people exactly how to become a member, quite honestly, but I'll tell you. Basically, you have to, somebody can only be invited to be a member if all of the members are consensus that this person will be an awesome fit. And basically the kind of like criteria is that they should have some level of kung fu. Interestingly enough, we had a member who actually thought that meant they had to know kung fu, and luckily she knew kung fu. And they have to be somebody that we feel like we could give our house keys to them and be able to go away for a month and come back and our apartment would be in just as good or better shape. So that's kind of one of our criteria.
Kung fu definitely helps with that.
Yep. So that's kind of our criteria for, because we're young, we're basically, this is only existing because of our friendship and trust in each other. And so we're still in kind of a state where that's...
Bree, I love you, man.
Also, you know, you may want to come and check out the classes and come to the parties, because as awesome as we seem up here, in private, we actually suck.
And I will say also, like, the other thing that when we is that that we don't have members like a gym has members. Everybody's a contributing member, which basically means being involved is actually like you're expected to work and take out the trash and stuff.
Another rule for your hack club, clean your fridge. Seriously.
And after you clean the fridge, remember to throw out the trash within 2 or 3 days.
Keep your eye out for the NYC Resistor Guide to House Cleaning for Geeks.
I think we have 10 minutes if anyone has any more questions.
Luke?
Yes.
Yeah. Any recommendations regarding physical security in a leased space?
Physical security?
Yes. Security,
we have a taser. I'm not fucking kidding either. We have a taser. And I think numerous people have been tased with it.
You can use a taser to light up LEDs.
Well,
insurance.
We just all trust each other, right? There's insurance too, but we all trust each other, and everyone makes sure the door's locked, and you know. But there's insurance. I mean, I don't think anyone really has anything of huge value, right? Am I wrong?
There's nothing worth stealing in our space. Nothing.
There's a guillotine in front of the door. 5 tigers.
We mentioned the kung fu.
Okay, right here.
What's the danger shield?
All right. The danger shield is a funny little beast. Originally, I had this idea that I wanted to teach a class on how to program an Arduino, and I didn't feel like teaching noobs how to like put LEDs into breadboards, so I made a shield that plugs directly into the Arduino that just has like sliders and buttons and blinkers and, you know, all sorts of things that just fits into an Arduino and lets you get straight to programming without having to know a single thing about electronics. So, you know, and then once I made it, I realized, hey, this thing's really fun to play with. And so it's a great way to learn Arduino. They're really fun to play with. You can do a lot of cool things with them. And Nick wants me to tell you that they're for sale downstairs. And it'll really help me because hopefully I can start hacking full time if I sell 10 more. They're $40 each.
And
the sliders
red.
Light up.
They're green. They used to be red. Ooh, the red are collectible.
I messed up. I'm sorry.
There's a question all the way in the back. Ooh, you have your own microphone.
I wish I did. Oh. That the shared physical community is something that can be done even in the largest city in the United States, and that issues of security and issues of personality are something that can be overcome when people actually get together and follow their passion. And that's one lesson that I learned from Bree at a very early on, and I hope whenever you go to your hometowns, wherever they are, that you follow this model of embracing your passion and building a physical network. So.
Thank you.
I'm going to act like that was a question, and hi, Noel.
Yes.
Yes. To add on, there are a lot of different talks over the course of the weekend, and also there's the Hackerspace Village down on the second floor. But tomorrow at 11 at night, 23 o'clock on your schedule, Nick Farr and a few other people are going to talk more about what your excuses might be for not starting a hackerspace and why those excuses are stupid. And I'm not sure what other talks there are. But
question over there on the left. There's 2 questions to the guy in the front first.
Can I ask you how widely dispersed you folks are?
We're all in New York.
Originally, I was like, we're going to do this in Manhattan because it's freaking Manhattan. And then I was like, how many of us live in Manhattan? And that was, then I was like, okay, where do you all live? Everybody lived near, like, downtown Brooklyn, so I moved.
So now Bree lives in downtown Brooklyn.
So you're saying that most of your members are from downtown Brooklyn?
Park Slope.
Well, there's a guy from the Bronx, there's a couple of people from Queens, there's a guy from New Jersey, so it's not just Brooklyn, but the majority is definitely.
You know, if you're out in the sticks in New Jersey, for example, you know, you've got a much larger pool of people to choose from or to, like, bring in. I mean, what are the chances of being, like, out in Pennsylvania or in Delaware and having this happen?
Where are you from?
I'm from Delaware.
Just do it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The thing is you really don't need, like, we have 27 or so people. You can just do. I mean, the cool thing that we have that actually really helped that we didn't expect is having shelves. If you make people come and leave their crap there, they have to come back to work on it.
That's great. But how many people live in New York City?
Yeah, but you know what?
I think you're making an excuse, and I don't think you should do that.
No. So let me just answer that. So in the classes, like when I've been at the classes, I usually ask, "Oh, where are you from?" And there's got to be 20 people that have come to the classes just from like the outskirts of New Jersey, not just from Newark.
There's actually a lot of people in New Jersey.
It's a lot of people from New Jersey that come, and I'm sure that.
Also,
I thought this got distracted.
I have something to add.
Yeah, if you don't have four people, don't do it.
On a side note, from like a completely different perspective, one of the things I do is make and sell kits online, and I sell kits to places like Alabama and Ohio and just like backwoods places all the time. There are a lot of people out there that are bored, and they're, you know, if you build it, they will come. And,
also,
you know, it's cheesy, but it's true.
Also, everywhere besides New York City, rent is much cheaper. You need way fewer people to actually get a space. You build it, they hopefully will come, so you don't have to lose it.
And if you're interested in building a space, so I would say, you know, go register a URL, njresister.com or whatever, and email it to us and to make, and they'll post it, and next thing you know, you'll have 50 people that want to be members. You know, it's that simple.
And we have 27 people in our group, but, you know, we could have many more in New York City. I think that you could easily find 27 people in Delaware or Pennsylvania. And, you know, talk to PharmaCon in Pennsylvania and Philadelphia. They've got a group, I hear.
Something to key on your point. I mean, I live in central New Jersey. I travel about an hour and a half, 2 hours to go to Minister meetings. It's worth it. If I go to a LOPSA meeting, that's an hour and a half as well. The difference is you're going to travel. So if you want to do it, they will. And if you make it available, people will.
See, he lives in New Jersey. You got two people in your crew so far.
Well, on that point, like I'm in Manhattan. It takes me like an hour and 20 minutes to get there. It's like when you consider like if you have a car, what your radius is when you can go anywhere of like, you know, an hour and 20 minutes. Like that's a pretty big area. So, I mean, you might be considering that like the area is a lot narrower than it is, you know, because everybody has a car out in New Jersey. So, I mean, well, most people. But.
And we started meeting every Tuesday in August of last year, and we didn't have our space. And we met every Tuesday until February 14th when we moved into our space. We still meet every Tuesday. But the idea is, like, we were actually an organization for, like, 6 or 7 months, just basically,
we met in coffee shops, we met at people's houses, we met everywhere, like, and while we were sorting it out, so we didn't actually have to have a space to start out. One last question, I think we have to wrap up.
When you guys said you're doing projects and stuff for your PCBs, do you etch them on site or do you send out to a company to do that?
We have little gremlins that do it for us. I'm kidding, Zach.
I use Gold Phoenix PCB. I wish they'd give me money for some sort of affiliate fee, but I don't know. They kick ass.
We also have all the ferric chloride that will kill us all if we need to.
Thank you, Brendan.
Thank you.
Thank you.